Hello and welcome to the Cannon Fodder Podcast. I'm film critic Daniel Barnes, and you know, a lot of people out there, they are working for the weekend. A lot of people are working for the man. Some people working hard, others, on the converse, hardly working. But me, film critic Daniel Barnes, I am here right now to declare that I am working for the Meister. What the hell does that mean? I don't know. What does any of this mean? If you're going to listen to this episode, get used to things not meaning things, all right? But here to harmonize with me, the Chad to my Jeremy, the Elvis to my all four of the four freshmen, it's the Meisterest working man in show business. It's Corky McDonald.
Hi, Dan.
What's up?
As someone who went by Corkmeister often through elementary school, I appreciate the name of the movie we're going to watch or discuss today, Verkmeister.
Yeah. I thought I was working for the Meister. Turns out I'm working with the Meister.
Yes.
I'm collaborating with the Meister. Gosh, who'd have thought?
But I graduated from Corkmeister to what is now, I'm a Wonk Master.
You're a Wonk Master.
I'm a policy wonk. That's what I'm known for. In the halls of DC, outside the halls of DC, places I get kicked out of. I'm a wonk man.
They're not saying wonk mass, but it's fine. It's good. Wonk master. Yeah, good. That's good. So, Corky, I was hoping that I could just completely derail the show just right off the
start.
Mission
accomplished.
Now, I know that the consultant that we brought in to the podcast strongly advised against the whole derailing the show from the beginning thing. I've consulted AI about it. Also strongly against. I'm going to do it anyway, just to prove that I'm a human being.
Sweet.
I'm flawed, for God's sakes. But I was doing a little research on Letterboxd today, putting together our list of films, our random number generator list. We'll get to that at the end of the show. Pick the film we'll review on our next show. And I was looking. You're on Letterboxd now. I'm on Letterboxd. You're kind of new. I've been on there since 2013. I've rated every movie I've ever seen, hundreds of lists. You can download it all into a giant spreadsheet. But I have to warn just everyone out there, just as a public service, it's a staggering amount of data.
Yeah.
Honestly, great MIT level kind of minds have gone down that rabbit hole, never to emerge again. And the ones that did emerge carried pocket watches and wore waistcoats. It got very pretentious. Like, if I want to live in Portland, I'll just live in Portland. Everyone's carrying a pocket watch, for God's sakes. But I was looking at movies that were on that list that you had seen, and there was a few on there that, to my mind, are no doubter, first ballot, canon-worthy type of films that you have also rated 5 stars. And I'm wondering, maybe we can just like skip the line a little bit. Maybe we don't need the whole full review of a few of these films, because I've seen them so many times. It's beyond a shadow of a doubt. It's been a while, but I'm not going to question these movies. So I'm wondering if maybe we can just like wham, 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 just let the canons roar right.
You
want to
fast track some canonizing?
I'm fast tracked. Tracking the I'm Mother Teresa-ing this bullshit. Are you kidding me? Yeah, I'm fast tracking the canonization. Absolutely. But I'll throw it up to you because, again, it's a two-way street. Like we said, it's just two keys to light this candle.
Fucking no hit me
and
with them, man.
If you're on it. So the one that just jumps out right away, I saw you gave it 5 stars. For me, it's 5 stars. It's actually my dad's favorite movie of all time. He actually went to the actual city, I think a year or two ago, Casablanca.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
I mean, that's just a no doubt.
Yeah,
that's in the canon,
yeah,
right?
Get that
like,
thing
that's
in
just,
there.
How is that not in there? So, boom, cha-ching, bah, one. The next one, Cary Grant, Katharine Hepburn, Howard Hawks, screwball comedy, Bringing Up Baby. I saw you gave that 5 stars. That to me is just one of the funniest movies. But if you feel that needs another watch, maybe
Dan,
it's been a while.
I know the consultant that you brought in to talk to us about not derailing also said don't derail the derail. Especially if you're not gonna rail it, don't derail it. I've never seen Bringing Up Baby. I don't know why it would be rated 5 stars on my Letterboxd.
Your Letterboxd is garbage. I'll tell you, just go through my Letterboxd. Spotless.
Are you going through my like wish list, the movies I want to
see? No, I saw you said it had 5 stars. Maybe I got the wrong movie. I'll check that one again. But here's another one. Have you seen The Third Man with Joseph Cotten and Orson Welles?
I thought we had already canonized that.
I don't think we did. No.
Okay.
Somehow we
just
didn't.
Derailed even further.
Okay, so I derailed the derailing of the derailment. Yes. Awesome. Sweet. So good. But I think Third Man is, again, just a no-doubter.
That's like one of my top 10 movies. The canon. Hell yeah. Great.
So boom. Ching, ching, ching. So Casablanca in, Third Man in, Bringing Up Baby. Let's just not derail it any further. Maybe that's a movie that doesn't exist.
Bringing Up Baby.
Don't bring it up, baby. So that's two canons going off, Casablanca and The Third Man, into the cannon fodder canon. I think that's like 73 now. We're really, it's getting nice and crowded in there.
We're getting to Wilford Brimley in The Firm age. That's how I number everything. It's, what was
just by Wilford Brimley.
What's the analog to Wilford Brimley's age?
There's no way he was 73.
No way.
Like, I read this thing where it's like he was like way younger than you would think. Like he was in his 50s when he made.
Oh, in The Natural? Something like that. He's 27.
Yeah, like he's 27.
It's the total opposite of Robert Redford, who's like 60 and trying to play a 30-year-old.
So Timothée Chalamet is playing him in the remake.
Yes.
Because, right? Again, just like perfect fucking like twinsies.
They're doing a Bob Dylan biopic style of Wilford Brimley. And all, it's all different representations of all the ages he was. you know what the consultant did tell us to do, though? Sat us down, looked us dead in the eye, and said, make sure you thank your PayPal supporters.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure you grovel and genuflect, get on your knees, prostrate in front of them, and let them know that they are the angels, the saviors of the show, and without them, you are nothing.
Absolutely. And I get my prostrate checked all the time. Like, you, some people say check your privilege. I say check your prostrate, okay? And if you would
I've seen the t-shirts.
To check your privilege and donate to the show, head over to daredaniel.com, find the menu at the top of the page, and click support the show. Any contribution, honestly, helps keep the show going, and thank you so much.
Today we're discussing Werkmeister Harmonies. The IMDb synopsis for Werkmeister Harmonies: a naive young man witnesses an escalation of violence in his small hometown following the arrival of a mysterious circus attraction.
Yes, this week's film, it's Werkmeister Harmonies, co-written and directed by Hungarian filmmaker Béla Tarr, co-directed by Agnes Hranitsky, Tarr's life partner and creative partner. Tarr, slow cinema god, that's what you got to know about him. Starkly beautiful visuals, long takes, meticulously choreographed camera moves, slow pace, no real plot, and very bleak existential themes. And Werkmeister Harmony typifies the Béla Tarr style. He made only 9 features in 30-plus years, but as we see in Werkmeister Harmony, these films are so complex and so non-commercial that he was going to take the time to get everything exactly right. He might spend a month on a single shot. It's like every shot is a film unto itself. Tarr retired from filmmaking after his 2011 movie, The Turin Horse. He moved to Sarajevo and started a film school called Film Factory. He passed away earlier this year at the age of 70, but of course, the films live on.
R.I.P.
Werkmeister Harmony is based on the 1989 novel The Melancholy of Resistance by Laszlo Krasznahorkai. It stars Lars Rudolph and Peter Fitz. It is a black and white film composed of exactly 39 shots. 39 shots, 146 minutes. That's about one cut every 4 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Set in a small town in Hungary during the communist era, although, is it? Because that is never actually what town, what country, what era, it's never really made clear. The title refers to the 17th century Baroque musical theorist Andres Werkmeister and his harmonic principles. Filming took place over a course of 3 years from 1997 to 2000, finally premiered at the 2000 Cannes Film Festival and made its theatrical debut July 12th, 2000. Didn't make a dime on its, I think, $1.6 million budget, but it was hailed as visionary upon its release. Lawrence Van Gelder of the New York Times wrote that Tarr, quote, beckons filmmakers who complain about the vapidity of Hollywood movie making and yearn for a film to ponder and debate. Werkmeister Harmonies debuted on the Sight and Sound poll in 2012 at number 132. It dropped down to number 243 in the tie for, I don't want to say last place, because these are the best films ever, like 243rd best film ever made. Still pretty good. Still pretty good. This is, I mean, there's been millions of movies. But it did drop down into that last spot, tied for with about 22 other movies. But amongst those films, cannon fodder inductees like Sullivan's Travels, My Darling Clementine, Videodrome, Distant Voices Still Lives, Taste of Cherry. We found a lot to like down at the end of the list here. Tar's 7 hour plus Satan Tango placed even higher. That is the 78th best film on the 2022 Sight and Sound poll. Clocking in, this movie was Werkmeister's 140 some minutes. Satan Tango, 430 some minutes. Jesus. So, Corky, I got to ask, if we do really like come see this project to its bitter end, like Satan Tango's on the list, you know, we're getting there eventually. So, like, what is your appetite for a 7 hour Bela Tarr film after watching Werkmeister Harmonies, which is about a third of its length?
Buddy, my appetite for a 7 hour film is non-existent. I don't care who's making it. Bela Tarr, fantastic filmmaker, but 7 hours, that's a chore. That is a week's effort.
That's a day. Right.
And I don't like doing that, but I can't sit for 7 hours and watch something. Anyway, yeah, this movie, Werkmeister, right? Challenging.
Yeah. It's challenging. Yeah. Yeah.
Not a film that you would walk away from and go, I know exactly what that's about. Or that you'd feel confident even expressing that you knew what it was about.
No, absolutely not. No, it's definitely a head scratcher. And I think where the point of entry for you and for me and for most people is going to be is the style of it, is just the technical achievement of it, right? These shots, these 39 shots, like it's an amazing film. Like the camera movements, the people movements are so composed. Everything's so composed, so clearly composed.
Very choreographed.
And so magnificently composed at the same time. You know how like, for some people, like things pull them in or pull them out of a film, right? So you think of like, say, shaky cam in the Bourne movies, right? Like some people will think, oh, that drew me into the film because it made me part of that world. Some people will think it pulled me out because it was too stylized. This film has the effect of like drawing you in and pulling you out at the same time, right? Because it has this like crazily epic scale of outwardly, but inwardly it also has an epic scale as well. But like these shots are happening, you just can't even believe like what is happening sometimes. And a lot of times it takes a long time to even realize like what is happening in this shot. And they're just so beautifully made that you're appreciating them as they're happening. Like what an amazing technical feat, but you're also like, I'm really compelled by what is actually happening in this film, even if maybe nothing is actually happening. Maybe if it's just a line of people walking or standing around, you know.
So. You have people who speak the language of harmony, nature almost, harmony, nature, and togetherness and creativity. And then you have people who speak the language of violence, oppression, and conflict. And you have these two aspects that Janos, our lead, who we follow throughout the movie, he wanders throughout and gets a taste of both throughout.
And that's he's about, kind of a blank slate.
He is. Right? So much reminded me of in
Rublev.
Yes. Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Right? He's the observer. He's the watcher. He's the one who's taking it all in. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I agree. It's not an easy film to analyze at all because it doesn't, like you said, it doesn't pin down like obvious specific meanings. Like there is symbolism here, but symbolism for what? I think you could come up with a lot of different things. I do think maybe the title of the novel it's based on gives us a slight clue, which the book is called The Melancholy of Resistance. And so we do see like resistance and revolution kind of in several forms blooming and getting crushed, right? So like political resistance and social resistance, but there's also this ongoing thing about musical and harmonic resistance. One of the characters is on this sort of like personal intellectual crusade to de-invent harmonics, right?
Sure.
And like change the whole, and basically blames this musical disharmony for disharmony in the world, right? But overall, there is this like apocalyptic sort of feel to the movie. It's sort of vague, right? But you just get the feeling that like the world is off kilter and everyone's sort of like yearning for this like simple past that maybe never existed, right?
Yeah.
And resistance kind of ultimately is crushed, right? Like it ultimately kind of proves meaningless and fruitless, or it doesn't, because
yeah,
like
right.
Again, this is a very elusive movie. Like, you know, I thought about that Friedrich Nietzsche quote about, you know, gazing into the abyss and then the abyss gazing back at you. I completely mangled that quote.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's what you have with like the central symbol of the film, which is the giant stuffed whale, this carnival that comes into this small little Hungarian town, very sleepy town, with its one attraction. And it's a terrible attraction.
Yeah.
Worst carnival ever. It's just a giant, smelly, stuffed whale. And that's it. Like, that's the whole thing. That's it. But it keeps attracting these crowds of people, none of whom are all interested in the attraction,
yeah,
except for Janos, right? Janos sees something in those dead eyes of the giant whale, right? He actually sees God.
Yeah.
In this whale. No one else seems to see anything. If anything, they just see the abyss.
And this whale, yeah, is in a, like a tin shed in the back of a truck. Mm-hmm. It's not like some grand spectacle.
No.
You go into a nice setup. No, it's just this large whale with about enough room for you to walk around on the sides in this smelly truck.
Just like, what the fuck is this carnival?
But he does.
And that's the only attraction.
Yeah.
And the prince. The prince, who is this sort of unseen figure,
who
just
we
a
learn
voice,
is an invention of the circus master.
Yeah.
He's like, I made the name. I'm the one who created an attraction. And he's this malevolent presence. Or is he?
Yeah.
You know,
but we never, right, exactly, because we never see it. But what we hear this creature preaching is like destruction, you know. Like, destruction is creation, tear it all down. Like, this is a very apocalyptic, nihilistic, just bring it all, the whole thing down, kind of vision, right? And there is this, like, crowd that keeps growing up
milling
around
about
it. Everyone's, like, talking about it. And it starts with, like, just sort of milling in small groups. No one seems, like, has any energy. They seem very disinterested. And then next time we see them, it's like larger groups and they're gathered around these like oil drum fires. And then it's massive crowds and they're gathered around these raging bonfires. It's like some sort of confusion and anger in this crowd is like self-stoking. And yet at the same time, it's like, is it because they all seem so like weirdly unemotional?
Yeah.
And yet they're ready to tear down society. It's just, it's again, it's not easy to explain, but I do feel like for all of like the formalism of the film and the surrealism of the film, the fact that this movie was made in 2000, there is something like weirdly prescient about this film and about our sort of downhill trajectory as a society in a very non-specific sort of way. It's not like it says like, oh, the internet's going to like ruin the world or like, you know, make America great again. It's going to do this or that. It's not like being specific about it, but it does like, it does seem to like capture something. There's these crowds of men who are vaguely angry and dissatisfied and don't seem to know or understand why. And then you have all these townspeople who are afraid to leave their homes.
Yeah. Even though nothing is actually happening.
And nothing's happening and they don't understand why. Right. And then there's just all this like free flowing anger and fear, and it's just like exploited by any voice who will like actually validate them.
Sure.
Whether it's the validation of like the society should come crushing down on these people, or we should bring society, you know, crushing down. Whatever it is, like they're gonna be validated by this thing. So I think it's like, I don't know, it's this feeling of like helplessness that I think probably we as a society feel right now in the face of what seems like a, you know, potential like apocalypse, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like we all sense something's horrible is coming, but like, what are we going to do? Right. go about your business until you can't, right? Like, I mean, you just think, like, we all know by now that, like, smartphones and AI are destroying society and making us stupid, but, like, try living in our society without a smartphone, right? Like, you can't live in society without these things. It gets to that point where you're complicit in your own destruction because you don't have any other options, right? You're either in society or you're not. Anyway, I think, again, this movie is like an abyss, and you see what you want to see in it, I think. You know,
so I think 100%.
It's open to vast amounts of interpretation and meaning and things like that. But I do feel like there was just something that, like, vaguely, like, creeped me out about this movie, about, like, wow, there was just, like, those, especially that as it gets to the end and the crowd gets whipped into the frenzy and there's the whole scene in the
hospital.
The men. Yeah, it's just, like, all these men who are, like, angry and they have no idea why.
They got nowhere to channel that anger. They got nothing to do.
One person says do it. And then, yeah, there's three shots in there. I guess you'd call it the hospital sequence, but it's really three shots that I'm thinking of. First shot is the marching sequence. It's just these men.
No
it's
sound.
Like 4 minutes. No sound. What also caught me, again, no emotion. They're not muttering, like, no. Immigrants get out of here or commies go home, or, like, no one seems to have anything. They're almost kind of zombie-like, just like, this is what we're doing. We're going, we're marching.
And
we're
the camera is beautifully following in and among the crowd above, then comes back down, zooms in close to faces, gets away from faces.
Oh, that's unbelievable, the camera moves in this movie. And then there's the attack on the hospital, which just goes from room to room. Down the hall, these thugs just pulling people out of beds and beating them
again,
and doing all sorts
of
horrible
sound
things.
Except for the sounds of, like, metal scraping, things being crashed and banged. Sometimes you're lingering on an empty room, but you hear the destruction.
Yeah. And then it seems to culminate in this destruction kind of coming down the hall, and finally a curtain is revealed. The men are stopped dead in their tracks, and what do they see? They see a incredibly old, incredibly desiccated man, completely nude, just standing there. Here it is. Here is the, I mean, you want the abyss. Here it is. Like, this is the reality of, like, where we're all going, right? And it just completely, it just stops them. It just kills it, right? I don't know, like, what it is that we're supposed to think that they feel, whether that's just shame or terror or just, like, resignation or what that is. But you think that's the culmination of the shot, right? But it's not. It keeps going. And then it's like comes into that close-up of Janos, who is hiding in the shower, just terrified by everything that he's seen. And then the final shot, which is that slow march out and that kind of like Fritz Lang in Metropolis kind of where it kind of pans down and they're moving side to side and then they're moving kind of in forward to back in the frames. That's just a three-shot sequence. And then the music comes in, too. I mean, that's just a three-shot sequence that is, like, it's unlike anything I've ever seen. And I was with Rublev, we kind of talked about this when we reviewed Andrei Rublev. I think we were both kind of like, this is good, but I'm a little on the fence because I don't really sure what to make of it. And then that three-shot sequence, like, just was like, oh, forget it. There's no way I could not, like, canonize this.
Okay.
Just,
see, I had the exact opposite take.
Oh boy.
I realized something about myself, that I am more forgiving of a movie if I feel it starts slow but ends with a purpose and pace. Whereas I thought this movie started bang, I was into it. I was digging it. But the longer it went on, the more it felt a chore with the extended scenes and what it was doing. There were moments like that whole hospital sequence up until the music swell, which I thought invalidated a lot of the feeling. It was kind of like an unneeded musical cue. I'm not against musical cues. I'm not against musical manipulation in movies to get you to feel something, but I didn't like it there. I love that whole sequence up until that part right there with the music, and still just fantastic looking and impactful, but I didn't like that.
Yeah, I agree to disagree on that
it's
one.
Just,
I
think with this movie, there is no way I could ever tell anybody.
Know, like, what are the right or wrong answers?
Yeah, unless you're like, that movie's fucking hilarious. Dude, I laughed so hard.
I mean, there are some kind of funny bits, but not.
But you would not call
funny,
it hilarious.
Not a comedy, for sure.
But no, the opening sequence.
My only pushback on your argument there, and again, I'm not trying to change your mind or anything. Like, I'm just like manipulating, but like manipulating to what? Because again, I come to the end of that sequence and I still am not exactly sure, like, what am I supposed to feel exactly? Like, yeah. I know it's a powerful moment though, and I think the music and the simplicity of the music really like underlines that.
And maybe that's it. Maybe it's because I'm like, okay, but I hear the music, I see the activity just stops and they all change. What's the connection?
I mean, there's some sort of catharsis, but I couldn't exactly say what.
Because the very next thing we see is Janos. He's in a abandoned and trashed retail store, and he's reading a diary of what was done. Like somebody kept a diary,
and it's so horrible.
Yes,
right?
Of the horrific things they did, and that breaks him further. Like he has to go see the whale again. I think he goes back to try to see the whale again, just to try to. Or am I misremembering?
Get back on track, to reorient himself. Yeah, no, absolutely. The crowd that, I can't remember what they say, but basically, like, the gist of it is, like, we weren't angry at what we were angry about, so we were angry at everything.
Yeah.
Right? So we just tore it all down, right? So, yeah, that's, I mean, and again, that's, like, I don't know. For me, that captures a certain spirit of the times of 2026.
Sure.
For me. But, you know.
For me, there was like three pivotal like sequences. The opening, which is a long Janos enters in. We don't know who anybody is. We don't know what's happening. But he enters in this dark bar at closing time. There's drunk men milling about, as in throughout this movie. And he leads them through a kind of like choreographed... and they're looking forward to this. They're like, please let Janos, I don't want to go home yet. I want Janos to teach us about the solar system. And he teaches them about the solar system and an eclipse. And it's kind of this language of harmony. Like sometimes it might be bad. Like it's going to get cold real quick and going to get dark. But then you stick with it. And then the sun comes back and he's got these men spinning, these drunk men spinning around like they're the planets in the heavens. And it's really just, I was like, instantly, I'm like, oh, I get it. I like this. This is great. I can do more of this. We follow him more, and throughout the night, he visits an old man who find out that's his uncle. He's kind of his caretaker, cleans up his place, puts him to bed. When he revisits him, that's when we get the Werkmeister theory kind of thing. And in a normal movie that isn't challenging, they're going to have someone tell you, oh, here's my thesis on this, and this is what it means to me, and this is why I'm doing this. This movie does not do this. It just shows him speaking almost like an ASMR podcast into a microphone, and it circles around or swings back and forth, and we see Janos gets a cup of tea, sits in the back, listens to him talk, reads his paper. It's swinging around. It dips. The camera dips down. We see that he's got like a small notebook just filled of words, like fucking John Doe in Seven style, just a notebook full that he's reading from. I don't know what the fuck he's talking about, you know, but this is the movie in a nutshell. It's giving you the thesis of the movie. It's for you to decide what that means. Right. And,
his whole theory is about like Werkmeister, impurified, I guess, this concept of harmony by adding the eighth tone in the harmonic scale, right? And so he says, this is like the root of all of our problems, like our aesthetic problems, our societal problems. Is like, this is probably not it, but okay, like,
but that's this man's version of it.
That
right?
is like, I know it, like, this is like one of the, I don't know, it's also like, this is like the intellectual of the town. This is like
very respected man in town.
We get the impression he's a good man at heart, but also like he really just wants to be left with his
bum ass wife.
There's the whole thing with his wife who, like, all she has to do is threaten to move home, and he's like, I'll do anything. Move that bag to the farthest point of the home. That was kind of funny.
Yeah.
That was pretty funny. Well, let me ask you this, Corky. You talked about it a little bit, but usually when I ask at the end of a review if you had a favorite shot, it's like you have a whole buffet of options. There's 39 here, but I had to ask, was there a favorite shot that we haven't talked about that you want to talk about?
Yeah. So there was that sequence. There was the ASMR sequence. And then there was the hospital sequence. A favorite, like, just shot. No, it's more just the way the camera moved. I really appreciated the way the camera moved with a character into the field, especially whenever Giannis would go to the open square, the town square. It would start with this open town square just filled with men milling about next to this truck in this whale, and then push in, and then Giannis joins. And if a shot ended at rising up out of eye level, the next one would usually start up above as well, and then sink down into eye level. It was really well composed. Oh, favorite. When he first goes to see the whale.
Okay, yes.
And you hear the sound of it cranking opening. And it's like, we don't know what we're going to get. We don't know what to expect. But it's almost like a Jack in the Box, like the sound of this thing being cranked and lowered. And this is how like cheap and... cheap is a bad word, but this is how like... destitute, impoverished these people are. It's really corrugated tin wrapped around the back of a truck that he's hand cranking, and then sets out these slabs of like cement board as a ram. I'm like, there's no OSHA on here. This is not, he has a little money box. That's his like money to let people in. But I love that anticipation of that and that sound of the truck back being dropped down.
It was that's a fantastic scene, and then it follows Giannis into the truck, you know, because he's weirdly enough with all these people, you would think, boy, this crowd is going to swarm as soon as the truck opens.
They have no interest.
No one even notices.
In fact,
even notices.
He comes out and says, "This is one of God's creations," and the guy's like, "I don't like it.
Yeah,
I don't trust it." Right,
but it follows him onto the truck. Around the entirety of the whale, and then off the truck.
But you never get a clear view of the whole whale.
No.
It's mostly in shadow.
No, and even as you said, like in the scene where like the it's being generally lowered, the door is being lowered and lowered and lowered, and then finally we see, and all we see is the tail.
Yeah.
Right? Like, because it's pointing the other way, so we don't even see that at first. So that's even more like tantalizing, but still, no one's tantalized. The shot that I want to point out. The shot where the circus arrives. Now, we're all familiar with the big, like, the circus has come to town. You know, greatest show on earth, or Dumbo and all, right? It's all big thing. Big parade with elephants. This is a different circus, Corky. When this circus is a gigantic box being pulled through the village. That's it. At night. In the middle of the dead of night. Right? And it's like,
oh, that's great.
The way that this shot happens, it's composed, like, it starts so far away, and the thing is moving so slow. Like, it takes you a little while to get a sense of the scale of this container that it's carrying, right? And it takes several minutes to actually get there. And then when it does, like, the camera finally starts moving around and turning to follow it. And at one point, the box, this gigantic box where the whale is contained, it consumes the entire frame. Like, the whole frame is this box moving. And then suddenly, right in the lower right corner of the frame, there's Giannis.
Yeah.
Right? And he gradually comes a little more into frame. And then we pan, and it goes off into the distance. And it's just like, that was just a shot of, like, car go from screen left to screen right. And that's it, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's all it was. And yet, like, it was the most complex and beautiful shot you have ever fucking seen. Like, the composition, the gorgeous, grainy, black and white photography is so stunning. All the camera moves are so stunning. Everything is just so perfectly realized. It's like, it's amazing. And that's, like, kind of typical of just about every shot in this film.
I like that shot a lot.
Yeah. So that's Werkmeister Harmonies. Corky, anything else you want to say before we wrap it up and give our ratings?
No, I got nothing else.
Just remind everybody, of course, we rate on the slight or sound scale. If we both think it was a sound selection, then kaboom, right into the cannon fodder cannon, you go. Joining new inductees Casablanca and The Third Man... good company. However, if one or both of us think it was just a bit slight, even a bit slight, sorry, sir, no canon for you, but we'll select a film not in the Sight and Sound 250 to put in its place. Corky.
Mm.
Werkmeister harmonies. Is it the slight or the sound?
It is just so ever so slight. I'm sorry. Mm. It just
spit
missed.
Take?
Yes.
Just it didn't work for you.
Like I said, the first half, it's the opposite of Andrei Rublev for me.
Interesting. Yeah. And you're, I can see being more forgiving as like finishing strong as opposed to starting strong. Although I think the film finishes strong too.
And you're, the part you mentioned about that truck part, that's in the beginning. So I was like locked in. I'm like, yeah, it's taken a long time. Yeah, it's in a different language. Yeah, it's dubbed in a different language than the language it's even shot in. It's esoteric. But I was in. And then it just, it lost that momentum for me. Very close. Very, very close. But
yeah, it was sound for me. Absolutely sound. But I'm not mad at you because, you know, as we both said, this is a such an idiosyncratic movie. I think we both agree. It's a true original.
Yes.
And if you are, like, you really are a cinephile, like, you should check this out.
I mean,
good or bad, like, you should really check this out because I've never really seen anything. I've seen things I'm like, okay, this influenced that. Or was influenced by this. I think Tarkovsky is kind of an obvious influence.
Absolutely.
And then you can go and look at some of the like slow cinema that's been influenced by Bellatar. But I think we both agree this is a one-of-a-kind film. But yeah, it is not destined for not the cannon for the fodder.
And the way I judged what ultimately decided, I would recommend this 100% nine times out of, or 10 times out of 10 to a cinephile. To someone I knew appreciated movies and tried to watch movies that challenge. It's not a movie I would recommend to just anybody. Whereas
No.
A lot of the majority of the canon movies, I'd be like, yeah, watch that movie.
Mm. Yeah. No, I can see that. I can see that. Absolutely. But, Corky, you know what that means is that I need a slighted film, not in the Sight and Sound Top 250, not in our canon, to put in its place. What do you got for me?
I got disappointment for you because I'm going to try to resell Mirror to you by Tarkovsky because that's what this movie reminded me of. you know what's crazy, though? Of the movies I was trying to run through, I'm like, what's an analog movie? And Third Man even popped into my head.
Oh.
But I was like, I think we canonized that already. But destruction, it follows society when a society's in decline or at least when rules aren't existing anymore and they're trying to crack down and make things happen, black and white, all that kind of stuff. Even interesting shots like that. But I'm going to go Tarkovsky's Mirror. I'm going to try to sell you one more time a movie
all right.
out of time and place, long shots, the way the camera follows characters or doubles as characters, point of view, amazing choreography. What else you got? A hospital. Raid.
A hospital. Sold. Yeah. Anything in a hospital. Well, I do appreciate the opportunity. And I'll admit, I've looked in the proverbial mirror more than a few times. Because I'll sometimes look back on movies that, oh man, I just couldn't quite say, you know, just like you with Werkmeister Harmonies.
Sure.
Couldn't quite get there. A Mirror was one of those that I just couldn't quite get there. And yet, you know what? I was actually just thinking about this today, so I do appreciate the opportunity to revisit.
Okay.
I'm going to stick with Slight. Just barely Slight. There's a couple other movies that I would actually put ahead of, like, if you had put that up, maybe I might have gone for this or that way. But Mirror, I'm going to keep it right where it was. For me, Rublev is still the classic. You know what, though? I did actually watch another Tarkovsky movie just on my own for fun.
Wow.
What the fuck is wrong with me? My God. Jesus. No, it was his first feature, Yvonne's Childhood.
Okay.
Also not a canon film, but also excellent, just like a Mirror, but probably just short of the canon, but it was also just like marvelous Tarkovsky. But just to let you know, the dripping water thing that was there from day one.
Oh,
okay,
really?
Like this dude has a thing for water drips, like gosh, seriously. But no, it looks like Third Man and Casablanca. That's two films
that's really
that's
good.
That's still a pretty good day at the old ballpark.
The other thing about me choosing Tarkovsky's Mirror was There's no other movie that's like this enough that I could say. Right?
Exactly.
Yeah. I could say, oh, this movie's like does this exact same thing. I'm recommending this movie instead.
Yeah, I do think there's like some films have indie films and foreign films of late. Some of them using like CGI technology and stuff have like gone into this whole like long take or even like single take going throughout the entire
film.
Kind of film. There's an indie film called Victoria that is like a one take movie. What's the other one? Son of Saul.
Yeah.
That's another one that I think was probably heavily influenced by Bellatar, I imagine. But,
what do you attribute the drop in one decade?
That's a good question. I do think there's a recency bias a lot of times to this poll. That was, I think, the first time people were voting on it.
Sure.
So maybe it was like Bellatar was just finally getting recognized on like the world stage as like a great filmmaker. We've seen other films where a re-release or like a restored version comes out and suddenly it jumps way up the list and then maybe comes down a little when that recency bias wears off a little bit. So yeah, I'm not really sure why it fell so hard, but also maybe like Satan Tango getting kind of accepted as maybe his true masterpiece.
People are like, we gave him 7 hours on this fucking thing. We don't need another.
Right? Like, yeah, there's no way. Like, you get three times the votes as Werkmeister Harmonies.
Well, that's what we thought about Werkmeister Harmonies. What did you think about it? Did you watch it with us? Have you seen it before? We'd love to hear your take on it. You can't watch this movie and not have a take. Like, that's another
thing. Take.
It's not a forgettable movie.
No.
Leave us a comment with your take on your favorite podcast app or contact us on Facebook and Instagram at DareDanielPod. Tell us your thoughts.
All right. Now it's time to randomly select the film we'll review in 2 weeks on our next episode. Spoiler alert, Satan Tango is not on this list. I don't have anything over 5 hours on our list. We have lives, people, for God's sakes. But here we go. Randomly generate a number for me, and that will correspond to a number on the list, and that number will correspond to a film. I'm quirky. That film is The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance.
Nice.
1962 Western, directed by John Ford. Of course, John Ford's My Darling Clementine and The Searchers, I think, is also in our cannon fodder canon. Man Who Shot Liberty Valance stars John Wayne, James Stewart, Vera Miles, Lee Marvin, Edmund O'Brien, Andy Devine, John Carradine, Jeanette Nolan, John Quayle. This is if you know old movies, this is
a cowboy fucking movie.
This is a cast and a half right here. This is some good shit. Give you the IMDb synopsis for The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance. A senator returns to a western town for the funeral of an old friend and tells the story of his origins. Quirky, have you seen The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance?
I have not seen it, but, you know, being someone who was born in 1976, it's a movie I've often heard about as kind of like a hallmark of a great western.
Absolutely. Fantastic movie. I've seen it before. It's been a really long time, so I'm so excited to watch it again. It's 123 minutes long. Looks like we will be renting this sucker. It is available on MGM Plus, if you have that, if you're the one person in the world who has that. Otherwise, you can rent it on all your favorite VOD services. And of course, it shows on TCM once every month or two. So it's certainly out there. It's one of the great Westerns. It's one of the great John Ford movies. It's one of the great movies all time. So I'm absolutely stoked to watch this one again.
Until then, follow Dear Daniel Pod on Facebook and Instagram. Like and rate us on your favorite podcast app. If you'd like to donate to the show, visit daredaniel.com, find support the show in the menu, or look for the donate button. If you're a fan of new...
Why did I interrupt you? Why did I cut you off? I'm not even paying attention. All right, go ahead.
If you're a fan of new movies, listen to Daniel review the top films of the day on Single Take with Daniel Barnes. For Cannon Fodder, I'm Corky McDonald.
And I'm Daniel Barnes. And until next time, save us a seat in the back row. Bye-bye.